Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, when it comes to our green spaces, the more attention we give them, the more we get out of them. With the nice weather we've been having all week, I thought it'd be timely for us to explore the realities of working in garden design with three of Ireland's leading lights in the space. And I'm delighted to be joined this morning by renowned garden designer Diarmaid Gavan. Ingrid Smith of Ingrid Smith Garden Design also joins us, as does Alan Rudden of Alan Rudden Garden Design. Alan, we might start with you. Tell us a little bit about you and indeed your business.
Bobby, how's things? It's Alan Rudden Garden Design. We primarily work on private gardens. We design, project manage and plant. I studied horticulture in Warrenstown many years ago. It's gone now. Most people are in the botanic gardens. And most recently, we've just developed a new part to our business where we are manufacturing and we're going to be offering kind of unique garden pots to the Irish market. And we have them on display with our own show garden at Bloom this year.
Okay, so you're doing a show garden at Bloom as you've done for many years, yeah?
Yeah, I've been involved now for 10, maybe 12 years at different levels, at different stages. And yeah, it's a brilliant show.
Right. Okay, stand by because I want to talk to you about your workload, the fact that you design rather than build now and a couple of things. But we'll come back to that after we talk to our next guest, who's Ingrid Smith. Ingrid, you're very welcome to the programme.
Morning, Bobby.
Yeah, we haven't talked to you in a while. You used to do great work with us.
We did on
your town, your main street, where we were looking at the impact of landscape and garden design and green spaces in towns.
Indeed.
Right across the country. So, remind us of your legacy and your wonderful business.
I suppose we did have a great time when we were on the show the last. It was quite prophetic that what we were discussing during that segment pre-COVID came to pass in terms of more of a recognition of public spaces. So it was great that we got to do that in advance. Busy times for me. I'm a full-time garden and landscape designer, primarily urban gardens. I would design the garden, put them out to tender, and look after them on site, and then I would take a keen interest in the planting of those gardens.
Right.
And selecting and making sure they're planted.
And your own background is around architecture.
It'd
be interesting to kind of just for our listeners to understand where that fusion comes between maybe architecture and garden design.
Yeah.
How different are they? I presume they are different, but
they're
what
different.
Are the key differences?
I'd say that being in garden spaces is a kinder version of architecture.
Right.
Architecture is building, it's getting the kitchen in for Christmas, it's taking the face fixing off wiring and all that kind of stuff. So it was a good learning process for me to be there. It is pure design. And during my life in architecture, I did get to project manage, look at planning applications, deal with building regulations, manage teams, etc.
They're all useful things in your work today.
Yeah, totally transferable skills, without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been invaluable.
Now, a man who needs no introduction, he's been on this show many times, Diarmaid Gavan, an old friend of the show. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, yeah. Now, remind our listeners, not that any of them need reminding about, again, you and your business, Diarmaid. You've been around a good number of years and you're somebody who's really never done anything else.
Yeah, I suppose I've been gardening for about 30 years, started off in the city, studied, as kind of Alan was alluding to, as a lot of people do in the Botanic Gardens in Dublin. I've done a lot of my gardening outside of Ireland.
Yeah.
A lot of my garden design outside of Ireland. But since COVID, I kind of rooted myself back here a little bit. So it's a great industry and we have a wonderful climate for it and a good economy for it now, I'd say too.
Yeah. It strikes me as a business that, you know, you talk about word of mouth referral, that, you know, if ever there was a business that would absolutely, you know, really show that, it would be garden and landscape design, in that, you know, somebody comes and looks at your work and says, whoever did that, I want them to do my house.
I think that's true. Also, I think people are scared of gardens and garden design and the industry in the past hasn't done a brilliant job on demystifying it, because we have all the Latin names for plants that people get confused by. People maybe don't understand soil, all that sort of thing. So if somebody sees something that's been done and they see a solution to a place, they'll go after that.
That's right. And they don't have to get involved in the jargon and the get into the weeds, let's call it.
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. Back to you, Alan. You originally did design, build, boots on the ground type work, but your business has evolved into more of design and planning now.
Yeah.
I'm interested in that transition, because I suppose you can't, sometimes, you know, you can't do everything and you're better off specialising in one end of it, you know, in terms of the business model.
Yeah, I suppose it takes time to learn that you can't do everything, but I suppose it's a natural...
You learn the hard way.
Yeah, a natural progression coming out of horticulture to set up the landscaping business and do design and, I suppose, learn your craft and your trade. And it does take a number of years, like on the ground, you know, and that's building gardens. I stood by what I do now, which is design. So I understand how gardens are put together and how to deal with all the different professions and subcontractors. And I think that's worked very well for me. And now we, you know, design large kind of private gardens from the very initial stage, like pre-planning. Usually it could be like a house that's bought that's getting an extensive renovation, or it's getting knocked in a new building is going in, and we'd be a liaison with the full design team, architects.
I'd just ask you about that. So if somebody's embarking on a major project, say a big house refurbishment, and they're putting on a new roof, rewiring, replumbing, the landscaping does it tend to be part of that? Of that total solution, or often is it looked at as something separate that happens after that?
Absolutely. No, it's 100% part of it now. And I think it's, you know, more so in the last 10 years, like Dermot there, who got the industry, in my opinion, like up and running 15, 20, 30 years ago. And now, like, it's such a big part of people's, like, property. You know, it's as important as the kitchen now, I think, for people.
Of course it is. Yeah. Ingrid, in terms of how we live now, and you mentioned COVID there, it was probably another time of transformation, that people are much more in love with their outdoor spaces than they were over the years. Again, that's played into your hands in a positive way in terms of business.
It has. As Alan mentioned, a lot of people are renovating, so that view to your garden is essential. People want that looking right. I'm finding that a lot of garden clients for gardens now are very interested in food and where their food is from. And there are a lot of foodies out there, so they want their edibles in there.
Yeah.
So they want that connection between the kitchen Alan mentioned and walking out to the garden, getting their herbs, maybe picking some strawberries, getting some fruit. So lifestyle plays into that.
And I think it's a wonderful feature to have in your garden, to go out and pick your own parsley or coriander or whatever it is.
Yeah, you're beating the system. Plus, you can get a client to put in just something as simple as a herb patch. You're taking that plastic out of a landfill. So even if you can do that one intervention, that feels like you're making a positive influence. Plus, it ties in with people's lifestyles as well.
And the climate change that we have, you know, maybe there are periods now of prolonged dryness with heavy rain. Then has it changed what we plant and grow?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Without a doubt, you can grow figs quite happily now. It's changed how we prepare the soil. You need to prepare your soil for flood events and dry events. It's also changed the suite of plants you choose. So you have to respond to that. Sometimes, I mean, you really need to upskill all the time with these things. You really need to continue educating yourself on how best to react. So that's what's also great about the industry. It's that it's not static. You're constantly learning and challenging yourself.
Dermot, what about, I suppose, grass would have been central to many gardens in the past. Have we moved away from it?
I think we're moving away from lots of things that we kind of grew up, or lots of things that became normal for maybe the last 150 years. In many people's eyes, gardens had to be as tidy as the house, had to be neat, and we're beginning to understand how nature works. And nature is increasingly important when it comes to gardens. Ingrid was just saying about this idea of growing your own. Even if you put in, that's such an easy start, because just plant an apple tree and don't do anything to it. Don't even feed it and it will produce apples. Because nature is amazing, especially in this country. In terms of grass, you know, lawns have an amazing history. The invention of the lawnmower was a game changer in terms of how people perceived big landscape. That came down into smaller landscape, and now we're realising that lawns may not be, or the way we've grown up with them, may not be the best way for the environment to garden.
Yeah.
They're a desert in terms of environmental benefits, because we cut the grass before it's a chance to flower. We disturb habitats for burrowing insects and other creatures like that. So, it's all changing. There's a big re-education going on, and people are, if they're lucky enough to have access to an outdoor space or own a garden, the way people are approaching gardening is completely changing.
I've loads of texts coming in, and just as you're there, Dermot, there's one there about the pros and cons of artificial grass. From what you've just said, I'd suggest that maybe it's a no-no, is it?
Beyond a no-no. It's been sold as this magical solution, and unfortunately it has real traction, so it's something that we have to kind of deal with. I don't think it's good to be fundamentalist about anything, maybe except artificial lawn.
Here.
Well said. Can you ask your panel a question? I have a southeast facing garden filled with gravel and stone. What's the best way to incorporate more greenery into it? And that comes in from Simon. Alan, yeah?
Yeah, but you could use like, I'd divide up beds in it and use a timber edge, and you can even plant through the gravel. You could use plants.
Would that be like a raised bed or...
No, it could be ground level bed.
Right.
Yeah. And I just maybe add in like mixed perennials into it. And, you know, you can have grasses and verbena later in the summer do very well in gravel beds. So, yeah, it'd be nice.
So you can build greenery in where there's a lot of, I suppose, what does he say, gravel and stone to complement what's there.
There's plants that for every situation.
Yeah.
Verbena would naturally seed themselves in gravel areas and spread, and they do very well. And
yeah.
A strong plant. Verbena lollipop is a good one. It's a small variety. It doesn't need support.
Here's one for you, Ingrid. I was hoping to install a water feature in my garden, but my budget is only €500. Any creative solution that your panel might have? That comes in from Matt.
That could be a...
Buy a water pump and a barrel and...
You could...
DIY job.
You could. There's the plug and play option, which is literally a self-circulating water feature. It's a bucket that goes around in a circle and out it comes. They can be a bit naff. If somebody's out there can maybe design something that isn't quite as... Yeah.
Are we heading into the fake grass territory here with some of them?
It's really... It's kind of... It's gnomes plus. Something as simple as a really, really pretty water bowl, like a big water bowl, Corten steel with... No pumps, no nothing, rain fed, with the dwarf water lily, magical.
Yeah, just a natural.
Natural.
You mentioned garden gnomes there, Dermot, are they a no-no?
No, they're not. I grew up in Rush Farm, and there was a house in Ballyboden, and many people will remember it because it's become part of maybe pop culture. And it was just a small, sloping front garden, filled with gnomes and collected garden ephemera that have evolved, you know, stuff that has evolved in many different cultures in many different countries.
And it's amazing how memorable something like that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It meant something to people. It delighted people. I remember for years, it had a big effect on me, partly because my parents hated it. Absolutely hated that it was in the area. Children were delighted by it. And I remember working with Helen Dillon on something, who was the most esteemed gardener really in the country. She was absolutely amazing. But she came from a kind of Scottish aristocratic background. And I was quite scared bringing up this idea of the garden in Ballyboden to her in the Domes. And I said, had she ever heard of it? Did she know of it? Because she would be used to very, let's say, formal posh gardens. And, she said, darling, I went to find it last year and it's gone.
Oh.
And I said, why did you try and go and find it? She said, because I thought it was important. And indeed, it was. Yeah. The following day, I went up to that house to photograph it and the gnomes were no longer there.
Oh, there you go. In terms of developing the business, Alan, is it important to, you know, align yourself with house builders, with other professionals to ensure that you have a good pipeline of work? Now, I see you're not taking on any new work for 2 years, so that's a good sign that you're pretty busy. But how do you go about prospecting new work?
I suppose, yeah, look, a lot of work would come through architects, interior designers, and just clients passing on work, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we're a small practice, which you have to be good at a lot of things, you know. You have to be able to, you know, come up with this design that meets your client's brief, but you also want to put your own stamp on it. You have to be able to, you know, liaise with all the subcontractors, all the different people. And I think being able to do all that and being able to deliver naturally gets you a good name or a good reputation. And that kind of speaks for itself. Just being able to deliver on what you plan out to do has been my biggest strength, like, you know, the follow through with it. And
Ingrid, about we've seen, I suppose, building and construction related costs really go through the roof over the last number of years. Have your costs risen in parallel? Do you have difficulty getting available labour, skilled labour that you need for specific jobs? Are you a sort of a template of the construction industry, even though you're not per se the construction industry?
The cost of doing business has certainly increased.
Yeah.
The cost of getting something built has increased. And the cost personally for me has increased. I'm not immune to the cost of living increases. So you have to constantly look at how much is it costing me to do business in parallel with how much is it costing us to build this garden for our clients.
Yeah.
So you have to keep an eye on that because you can't be working for nothing.
Yeah.
Plus you also have to be confident about your value. The value you're bringing to a project. So a garden that's costing 50,000 euros, that's well designed, that's for life, and being built once and well,
yeah,
is kind of the principle I would go by. So, and I think clients as well are definitely more aware of how much a garden costs, and they're more aware of doing it right.
Dermot, is the business end of all this a pain in the ass? Or is it something that you've had to embrace over the years? It's part of staying alive. It's part of...
It is. It gets easier with technology and with AI. AI is a game changer in this industry.
In what way? Somebody.
In kind of every way. In just in terms of organising, in terms of taking the drudgery out of... If you're, you know, working on a tender for something in terms of organising, and it's about to be a game changer in terms of design, because every day AI is getting better and better. So it'll have a profound impact on everything. I think with the advent of, I mean, I remember the days pre-computer. I just kind of travel the world with an iPad now and everything is on that iPad. So technology has certainly made things easier. I think what's about to happen is the craft of gardens, of garden making, garden, all the elements that go into building a garden, planting a garden, is about to kind of explode and get much more valuable as AI kind of helps with the other process. And as the tools are given to householders to control design themselves.
Okay, well, it's a great discussion. Thank you all for coming in today. It's a lovely time of year to discuss the business of gardening, landscaping and design. I want to thank my guests, Dermot Gavin, Ingrid Smith and Alan Rudden, and wish you all very well in your endeavours out there building the, and designing Ireland's and indeed the world's gardens.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.